Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
I just clarify the 40 to 50, are they people that you know to be professional agitators? You just refer to them as children. Are they students? So just so we know, how many of the people that you arrested last night were professional agitators who had no affiliation with Columbia University, and how many of them were students who are at Columbia University?
A great question, and we are sorting through that now. It has been indicated by Columbia when they reached out that the substantial number were outside influences. When you look at the wearing all black, covering your faces completely, those methodologies, you know, our intelligence division study this type of behavior across the globe. We just had a team that just returned from overseas looking at some of the methods that are being used with these actions. There's no coincidence that you're seeing these young people across the globe being trained with the same type of individuals. And that is our concern. It's more than just Columbia. It's more than what we saw at City College. This needs to be a clarion call for our country. These are our children, and we can't allow them to be radicalized like children are being radicalized across the globe.
Which is why you have to fire the professors, Mayor Adams. We said it here. Oh, Tony, they said, oh, you're just being bombastic. Oh, that's just so silly. Fire the professors. Stop sending your kids to those universities. Let them state clearly, we don't do that here. When they state clearly, we don't do that here. Take down the American flag and put up a Palestinian flag. We don't do that here. Engage encampments and keep people from walking through campus. We don't do that here. Physically take over buildings. We don't do that here. Terrorize students for their religion or the color of their skin or their sexual orientation. We don't do that here. When they state that, like University of Chicago did regarding free speech, just like University of Florida recently did when they said, let's be clear, we are not a daycare. When University of Washington, St. Louis said, yeah, we're not going to stand for this. That is saying these are schools you can go to. Columbia, Harvard, Yale, University of Pennsylvania, these are not schools you go to. The Ivy League is dead. Let the new Ivies rise. That's what has to happen. But I want to dig into this professional agitator fallacy. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833. Got Tony. I'm going to get into it. Don't worry. Stick around. I got a crap ton happening for you today. But it's always important to note what's happening while the other thing is happening, right? So this is the big subject. Everything with the campuses and the violence and the pushback, for example, at UCLA, where the police were called in, actual riots last night, Columbia University, where the police had to go in and arrest everybody. These poor kids they were going hungry and they were going to die of dehydration if the university, Columbia University, didn't allow them food and water. Nobody was stopping food and water from going in. Well, we just want a commitment that they won't do it. There's a really great analysis online about how everything that happened in Columbia is a passion play. They just wanted to make themselves in concert with Hamas. They didn't look at Hamas and say a terrorist organization. They looked at Hamas and said, how can we be more like them? And so we're clear, every call for free Palestine, every chant of from the river to the sea, every time they refer to Israel as an apartheid state, that is support of Hamas. Hey, Israel, it's wrong to have the policy of settlements in the West Bank, in my view. Now, someone says that, that's about policy. I happen to be fine with settlements. I opposed Israel's policies regarding COVID. And certainly Israelis have their own issues. There's a latest poll from the Jerusalem Post reporting over half of Israelis believe Netanyahu should resign. Yeah, we talked about this when I got back from Israel. It was one of the things, it hits you really, really hard. we think of Netanyahu as a fighter. We think of Netanyahu as strong and Likud in terms of political parties versus labor. And understanding Israeli politics is just nutty. The Israelis say this happened on your watch. 1,200 people murdered, and you're the defense guy? Nah, we ain't buying into this. He also has indictments. He has other issues. He's just not popular. You can hate it, love it, doesn't matter. It's just reality. It's far different than a member of the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer, calling for an election, which is meddling in another country's elections. And certainly an effort to stop what is happening right now, which is Israel moving on Rafah and putting an end to Hamas. We'll get to that story. But while we're paying attention to this thing, and an important thing, we forget that the Biden administration made a move on Title IX and told women to lay back and take it. Men can claim they're women. They're going to be fully protected by Title IX in universities, and there's not a thing you can do about it. As a matter of fact, if you complain about it, we, the federal government, will go after you. We, the campus, will go after you. That's what they're seemingly saying. The changes that come to Title IX, which is about forbidding discrimination based on sex and education, it will now ban discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Translation, men can say they're women, play in women's sports, and women can't do anything about it. Too bad. You now have a series of states and attorneys general. There was one lawsuit that's led by Tennessee and West Virginia. It was joined by Kentucky, Ohio, Virginia and Indiana, my beloved Indiana. There's another challenge that came Monday that has Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, and a host of others challenging this ruling. I don't argue that we shouldn't be discussing what's happening on these campuses right now and the bigotry and the madness and the Marxism, etc. But you understand what's happening on a federal side. Look what they're doing while we're focused on this thing. You know, the thing that Joe Biden doesn't even talk about. The man can't stop talking about January 6th. Morning, noon, and night, January 6th. But no mention of what he has just witnessed over the past week. Instead, the Department of Education, I should say the Office of the Attorney General and the Department of Education move forward in erasing women. And we should be clear, that's exactly what it is. It is the erasing of women. And yet here we have suburban white women watching what's happening on college campuses to their children, watching now what the federal government is doing to their children, and they still look at Joe Biden and say, well, I have to vote for him. Abortion's the most important thing ever, don't you know? No, it's not. It is not the subject by which you vote. You need to ensure that someone has the right to an abortion, partial birth, but you don't care what happens to your daughter in college? Sorry, you're weird. Really, really weird. And let's also be clear, suburban white women, you're terrible. You change the way you vote, and everything at least has the opportunity to work out. It's not going to work out perfectly. Nothing works out perfectly. Dear Lord, nothing's perfect. But a society that recognizes your daughter as a woman is clearly better than a society that doesn't recognize your daughter at all. A society that doesn't believe in the harassment of others based on their sex or their religion or their sexual orientation, etc., is better than a society that says, oh, it's happening to the Jews? I don't give a damn. Clearly better. And what do you do, suburban white women? Yeah, I'm talking directly to you. I'm sorry husbands don't talk to wives like this. I'm sorry wives don't talk to husbands like this. You're wrong. Your priorities are all screwed up. You are so chock full of ridiculous guilt, you can't figure out what's the value of your life. You will sacrifice your children to the mobsters, the gangsters, the monsters, the twisted, the deplorable, the disgusting, the sick, the purely evil and hateful. So you can turn to your friends, well, I had to support abortion rights for women, didn't I? Good God. So this is happening. Also happening, the Biden administration now taking a look at what is happening in Gaza and saying, you know what? We should really consider taking Palestinian refugees. What? I don't even know what that means. Egypt shouldn't take them. Jordan shouldn't take them. Syria shouldn't take them. The United States should take in Palestinian refugees. This has been a conversation across several federal agencies where they've discussed the documents showing, CBS News reporting, they have discussed the practicality of different options, as reported, to resettle Palestinians from Gaza who have immediate family members who are American citizens or permanent residents. Are these the same people who, in poll after poll, support Hamas and like what happened on October 7th? Are these the same Palestinians who attack aid trucks when they do get in? I mean, is there going to be any kind of vetting? Oh, no, you've got a cousin in Michigan. Welcome. I utilize these moments to remind the administration that we have homeless veterans in the United States. If we're going to spend money, we have homeless veterans in the United States. Shouldn't that be the first focus? But then again, who am I kidding? I thought the southern border should be the first focus, but no, it was aid for Ukraine. And I'm not opposed to aid for Ukraine. I favor it completely. I know some of us disagree about that. We're still friends. But not before the southern border. I can't even fathom how anybody could get to that place. We don't take care of the southern border, aid for Ukraine. We don't take care of homeless veterans. We bring in refugees from Gaza. Can I ask, what about the refugees in Israel? I am pretty sure I'm the only person on radio in the United States who's reported on this. And if I'm wrong, good. Good. There are over 80,000 Israeli refugees. They can't go home. All that whole area around Gaza, which they refer to as the Gaza envelope, they're still not back. The areas to the north, I was in one of those areas. I was at Matsuva. I was 1.3 miles from the Lebanese border, saw it with my own eyes. It's empty. It's empty. No one's living there. And we knew when we were there that Hezbollah could see us. I may have given someone the finger. I don't know. It's not like it's doing anything. It was more performative than anything, but it did feel good. I will admit that. They can't go home. They're refugees in their own country. We taken in any Israelis? By the way, the answer is no, we're not. And no, we shouldn't. We should put an end to Hamas. We should put an end to Hezbollah. We should put an end to the reign of terror that is Iran supporting all these terrorists. And then let's have some peace. You know how many kids on college campuses have said that? Zero. Well, none of those Jewish students have said that. And those who support rational thought. The rest of the protesters, no. They don't mention Hamas at all except to say, we're with them. I mean, they might say it in low tone. Some of them really do shout it out, but they're all saying it. While we are focused over here, the Biden administration wants to erase women and then really not check who's coming into the country from Gaza and say welcome. The election is November 8th, I believe. Mom, I'll put it on your calendar. Is it November 8th? When is Election Day? Election Day 2024. Yeah. Oh, November 5th. See, I said November 8th. I would have been late. Good thing I corrected myself. November 5th. It's even closer. Three less days to worry about. I'm Tony Katz. may have seen by now North Carolina, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where the bigots took down the American flag and put up a Palestinian flag. Look, they're gross. What do you want from me? Well, the chancellor went out there, Chancellor Roberts, who somebody said is the son of Cokie Roberts. And I was like, no, really? That's just a weird fact. Cokie Roberts, long time journalist, a great name in journalism. And he went out there and he puts the flag back up. He's there to put the flag back up. Tony Katz today. Well, there was a moment where the flag wasn't up and it was going to hit the ground. Enter a group of fraternity guys, Pi Kappa Phi. I don't know it, you know, off the top of my head. They are holding the flag up. They won't let it drop. And there is a photo of them. Water bottles are being thrown at them by these bigots. Water itself, they're being screamed at. They're being yelled at. They're holding it up so it won't drop. And there's one of them. He's got a blue polo shirt. It's open. Honestly, if the collar was popped, you would have thought he was Tom Cruise's friend in Risky Business. It's classic. He's got a backpack on, and he's holding his phone like he's videotaping, and he has got a smile on his face as if to say, look at these losers. And there's the fraternity behind him holding up the flag. One of them has a Hooters t-shirt on. So someone decided, hey, you know what? Pi Kappa Phi men defended the flag. Throw him a rager. So they went to GoFundMe. Commie losers across the country have invaded college campuses to make dumb demands of weak university administrators. That's how it reads. But amidst the chaos, the screaming, the anti-Semitism, the hatred of faith and flag, stood a platoon of American heroes. If you can hum that behind me, Jason. If you could do that, that'd be great. Armed in Vineyard Vines in Patagonia, fueled by Zin and White Claws, these triumphant Bohemians protected Old Glory from the unwashed Marxist horde, laughing at their shrieks and wails and shielding the stars and stripes from Soviet missiles. These boys, no men of the UNC Chapel Hill Pi Kappa Phi, gave the best to America, and now they deserve the best. Help us raise funds to throw this frat the party they deserve, a party worth of the boat-shoed proletariat who did their country proud. Honestly, still the greatest country in the world, everybody. That is fantastic. And they went to GoFundMe for this fundraiser, and they set a goal of $25,000. And to date, they have 741 donations for $20,786. How is that not the most joyous and refreshing story? All of this white male toxic masculinity in this photo. Oh my God. Honestly, if your daughters look at that photo, they're going to get pregnant immediately. Please, please make sure they only look at it with sunglasses. You think of all the beta males that your daughters have gone to school with. And here's some guys standing up. Oh, it's so great. As with all donations, check, double check, and recheck before you give. I'm told this is the official one, but you never know. It's up to you to decide. This is Tony Katz today, bro. One of the reasons I oppose ESG, environmental social governance, when it comes to anything done on a state level, is that you do not want states making investments for state employees that are based on radical ideology. You want investments made based on a return. If you are tasked with the pension of government employees, whether you believe that they should have pensions or not, if you're tasked with that job, your job is the return. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Find everything I'm doing at TonyKatz.com. Making moves for the sake of making them, for the sake of posturing, is of no value. Yet when I heard that Indiana State Treasurer Daniel Elliott was making an investment into Israeli bonds, I was certainly happy to see it, but I thought it was important to ask the same question. When treasurers of states engage in investments, what are they looking at? What are they dealing with? What are the decisions made? And are decisions made based on what's happening domestically or politically? Daniel Elliott joins me right now, state treasurer from Indiana. It's a $5 million investment you announced today in Israel bonds for the state of Indiana. This is part of $17 billion you oversee in state assets and the overseeing of state funds. Talk to me about why you made this purchase.
Hey, Tony. Well, hey, first off, thanks for letting me come on the show and talk a little bit about why we made the decisions we made and why I made this decision on investing in Israel. And first off, while the $5 million is the amount that we just invested today, a couple months ago, we actually invested $25 million. So this is the second investment we made in Israel in the last couple of months since the October 7th tragedy. So, but first off, the real main reason is fiduciary. It's a good investment. And my main job as the chief investment officer of the state of Indiana is to make sure that we get a good return on our investments. Part of the reason why we do that is because by having a good return on our investments, then we literally get to tax the people of our state less. So when Israel came to me and said, look, we'd like to interest you in investing in some more bonds. It's a 5.5% interest rate for a 3-year bond. That's incredibly great. And I'm like, wow, this is a really good investment. And I'll just say right off the bat that, I believe in the economy of Israel. Because they're at war, any nation at war is going to have some struggles. But overall, the economy of Israel is very diverse. It's very strong. They got a strong tech sector. The people of Israel are very focused and hardworking, and you've got a lot of entrepreneurship in that community. All in all, those are all the indicators of a very, very solid investment. And of course, you give me a 5.5% interest rate, I'm like, that is a good deal.
So in the press release that you have, and I'm quoting here, Indiana currently holds $105 million in Israel bonds. After this, the state will hold $110 million, a $5 million buy today. This purchase is a $5 million bond at 3 years at a fixed rate of 5.5% and yield at 65 basis points higher than U.S. Treasury notes. Israel has never missed a payment on its debt service. So you talk about the 5.5% being a very good return. Compare that to other countries or other bonds that you look at.
If you look at other countries, you're not getting these kinds of returns. And when we look at even our own, like I said, Treasury notes, we're 65 basis points above that. So you're looking at something that is a really good investment in a really stable economy, even while they're at war. And imagine, other countries that are at war, they can't touch this. And so we look at this and say, hey, first off, I've got to focus on my fiduciary duty as state treasurer and say, what's good for the state of Indiana? And that is really, really good investment. And it also, frankly, helps our closest ally. So all in all, I'm looking at this saying, this is a win-win for the state of Indiana. It's something that's going to help our state be able to keep our tax base lower. All these are pluses for our state. And I look at it, and I'm not going to lie, I'm also a little proud of the fact that we are the fifth largest state investor in Israeli bonds. And that means that we are the only people investing more than us right now are states like New York, Florida, Texas, Ohio, which are, you know, which have frankly much larger economies. So we're doing something that's really good for our state, as well as helping an ally.
Talking to Daniel Elliott, State Treasurer of Indiana, where they have purchased $5 million of Israel bonds. Something else in your press release, and I'm quoting here, "While there may be a few loud individuals on college campuses and other places that want us to abandon Israel, I believe now is the time to refocus and recommit to our most important ally. We don't need to boycott and divest, but engage and invest. And yes, we hear on college campuses the push for boycott, divestment, and sanction, boycott Israeli products, divest from investment in Israel, and sanction Israeli companies and Israeli products. This is all an effort, BDS, in order to destroy the country and end relations with them." But this paragraph, what I just read, could lead one to believe that the move made, at, even if it's at 5.5%, even if it's a higher return than U.S. Treasury notes, is all just posturing. This is Daniel Elliott, State Treasurer of Indiana, wanting to get on radio, wanting to get on TV, wanting to make a name for himself, and not actually doing what's best for Indiana, but rather what's best for his brand. Respond to that.
Well, no, and that's that. I'm glad you asked that question, because obviously those people don't know me. I'm just a guy from Martinsville, Indiana, a small community in southern Indiana. And I'm telling you, one thing that I'm more worried about than anything else is doing a good job. So they can make that criticism. That's their issue. The reality is simply this. It's what's good for the state of Indiana. And I made a commitment when I got elected to always put the state of Indiana first. Not myself, not my own feelings or my own wants, but the state of Indiana. Shoot, I'm a horseman. I would love to invest in horses all day long, but I also know it's a terrible investment, so I'm not going to do it. Not for the state, not for myself personally. So, you know, again, people are going to criticize, and free country, free to do so. But I know what I'm doing is focusing on what's best in the state of Indiana, and the numbers prove it out.
When you make a move like this, do you check in with the governor in Indiana, Eric Holcomb? Are you talking to other agencies about a move like this? And do you receive any pushback?
So I actually have been given the authority by the General Assembly to make these decisions on my own sole discretion. So the first answer is no, I do not check with other agencies to seek out their permission, so to speak, on these issues, because I don't need to. Now, what I do, because I just believe it's good to work well with your coworkers, is once I've made a decision like I have in this case, I did reach out to the governor's office, to the Senate Pro Tem, to the Speaker, to other elected officials like our comptroller, Elise Nshala, and reached out to them and said, hey, I want you to be aware, here's a decision I'm going to make. And that way, if there's feedback, of course, I would welcome feedback. But also, if something were to happen, I know that they can say, hey, direct those folks to me. If somebody has a question, why, you know, and ask the governor's office, why did you make this decision? He can say, well, that actually isn't the governor's office decision. That is the treasurer's office. So reach out to them.
I made the mention earlier about ESG. This is a post on X from David Bangert, who is a journalist up in the Lafayette area, so near Purdue University. And he's quoting here, State Treasurer Elliott spearheaded an effort to remove politics, specifically environmental, social, and governance conscious investing, or ESG, from state investments before approving the purchase of $35 million in Israeli bonds several months later. I bring this up because this is exactly why I started the conversation the way I did. You're going to take hits for this. You know they're going to come from college campuses. Will any of them, even though you describe being given the authority by the General Assembly in Indiana, are you expecting a response from the General Assembly in Indiana saying, what do you think you're doing, or how dare you?
Actually, I do not expect that because, again, as I mentioned earlier, I reached out to the speaker. I reached out to the Senate Pro Tem, let them know what I was doing. They have expressed support for what I've done, so I don't expect that to be a problem. Now, at the same time, you know, when people do make that criticism, and that's a fair criticism to make, I go back to the numbers. You know, ultimately, when I talk about combating ESG, you know, ESG, the principle behind ESG is that you're not focusing on the return. You're focusing on these esoteric political agendas. I'm totally fine with investing in renewables or other issues new technologies if they're a good return on investment. If they're being subsidized by the government, if they aren't a good return on the investment, then they're not a good return on the investment. The numbers prove it out. That is the real crux of all of this. My job as a fiduciary is to focus on getting the best return on the investment for the people of the state of Indiana. And if that means that we're going to invest in coal because it's good for the state of Indiana, then by golly, we need to invest in coal. And if that means that we're going to invest in Israel because it's good for the state of Indiana, then we're going to invest in Israel.
As a matter of understanding how much money you're dealing with at any given time, you made the decision to put $5 million into Israel bonds, bringing Indiana's total to $110 million in Israel bonds, a fixed rate of 5.5% for 3 years. How much money are you looking at any given time, and where to invest it, and how often do those decisions come?
Well, those decisions come every day. We invest those. That is literally the primary duty of the Treasurer of the State of Indiana. So we're looking at those that $17 million and looking at where's the correct way to invest that, what's the correct percentage. So if we look at Israeli bonds, we're looking at 0.8% of our total portfolio. So it's a really relatively small amount. And the reason being that it is a relatively small amount is because we've got to have a diversified portfolio. That just is what's best for the state of Indiana. And also, because we are a state, these are funds that we use to pay our bills. So they have to be liquid. We have to have a lot of availability to cash when we need it to be able to pay the bills of the state.
Do you talk about this with other treasurers? Do you pick up the phone and call the state treasurer of Oklahoma, Todd Russ? Do you speak to others and say, hey, what are you doing? Is this considered an outlier, or is this considered a best practice amongst your colleagues?
That's a great question. The reality is I speak to my colleagues all the time. I've spoken to Todd Russ about 3 hours ago. So, I speak to state treasurers all across the state to get input, to get ideas. They take ideas from us, and not just Republican treasurers. Of course, I speak a lot to my colleagues who are Republicans, but I also speak to my colleagues who are Democrats. The treasurer of California, Fiona Ma, and I have built a good friendship, and we share ideas back and forth all the time.
Daniel Elliott is his name. He is the treasurer of the state of Indiana. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. More to get to. I'm Tony Katz. Boeing needs cash, and a lot of it. Boeing needs to solve its problems, which are pretty large. The issues with the 737 MAX, you've had the doors blow out and wheels are falling off, and not everything is specifically Boeing's fault. That has been from you guys made clear to me. What about what the airline is doing in terms of maintenance? What about some of the suppliers and their issues? Legitimate, but it clearly falls back to Boeing. In my view, they're the ones saying, look at the great planes we make. And the answer is, really? There's an issue. Tony Katz today. So they're trying to solve their problems. Their answer? $10 billion in fundraise. They've raised $10 billion from public credit markets. They've been selling their debt. To solve the problem, it was the CFO, Brian West, telling investors, saying, look, we're going to get this handled, but it's going to cost. And they've spent approximately $4 billion in cash. So they just raised $10 billion. The interesting story here is that Bloomberg states that there was nearly $80 billion in demand for the debt, which helped Boeing get a better interest rate. Now, I take that in a certain way. Maybe somebody who's a financial professional would disagree. there was a lot of people who wanted a slice of this pie. They saw this as good debt to buy. Is that because Boeing, an American company, would be considered too big to fail? That if anything goes wrong with Boeing, the government would be there to bail them out, so therefore their debt will be made whole? That's not a crazy thought. I mean, how many more banks where there are buyouts and issues, and all of a sudden, oh, here comes Chase to save the day. Oh, no, these banks, even though they didn't actually check who their depositors were, they didn't check credit status or anything else, will cover those losses. No, not your bank. Your bank is screwed because it's somewhere in the Midwest, and we don't really give a damn about you people. So that's the question. Was this move made it so valuable to people because the government will bail them out if anything goes wrong? I want Boeing to succeed. I'd rather Boeing succeeded than Airbus. Airbus is from France. Don't make me love the French. All right, the fries, the toast, the Louvre. After that, I'm good. Well, soccer core is very pretty. After that, there are some wines, some cheese. But that is it. And Gerard Depardieu. He was a good actor. Is he dead? I hope not. If he is, rest his soul. The point is, Boeing's got some cash. I'm Tony Katz.